over the Nazis, and that's why they scare me more, this Republican Party.
And I can understand it. Got to roll, Kevin. Thanks for getting the last word in. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye. It's our buddy Kevin from Brooklyn. Time for us to roll out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for a great start to the week. I'll look forward to tomorrow evening as well. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch. Thanks to our chat room moderators, our news ninjas, bloggers. Congratulations to Matt Osborne for making the front page of the Huffington Post. How about that? That don't just happen every day. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org for their continuing sponsorship of these programs. Thank you to all of you who, with your calls, your emails, your chat room participation, and your financial contributions, help make this the amazing little experiment that continues and rolls onward. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com, so is the snail mail address. Be great if you could use it. It stays pretty grim around here. Who am I kidding? So that's the program. Thanks for hanging out in here, Ferg, for a little bit. Time for homework.
No, it isn't. I have to write the paper.
And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Right with the world. It is Monday evening. The horn is back on the air. I'm Bob. Grateful to John Fox for a heroic effort last night bringing all Foxed Up on the air, despite the fact that he is a man tormented by allergies right now. You could hear the heroic quality of his voice, and I'm not making light because I see down where John is, or depending on one's view of the universe, up where John is. Australia, that is. Winter is ending, and spring is coming, and things are blooming, and so yeah, John was a little bit stuffy. And I really appreciate him getting the show on the air last night so that we could get conversation radio started on Sunday night like it should. And I hope you're feeling better, John. I understand John is dosing himself with local raw honey, which is a great way to beat back allergies. So, good on you, John. Good luck. Heading to the chat room here in a second. It's been an interesting weekend. I just got the streaming computer back on the air in time to get us going this evening. Keep your fingers crossed, etc., 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 the things, you know, that all the little electrons keep holding hands until, you know, roughly 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Because we got a lot to talk about, but don't we always? I want to commend everyone, by the way, for a wonderful show this past Friday. Friday on the front porch was just Jim Dandy, start to finish. And of course, as ever, this being conversation radio, I can take very little of the credit for that. I have to afford the credit to you who make things so very interesting, so very compelling, and prove, in fact, prove the theory of conversation radio, of a model that works differently from typical over-the-air terrestrial right-wing radio, in which the caller gets just long enough to say, "Magadettos from Busted Knuckle Rush. I just want to lick your behind. I love you so much." Well, that's wonderful. Let's talk about what a communist Barack Obama is. Yuck. But anyway, speaking of calling Barack Obama names, just a little something to throw out there for the fun of things. You know who that filthy animal Neil Bortz is, right? And he is. I mean, come on, please. Well, Neil Bortz, I guess he decided he hadn't done anything obnoxious enough to get himself into the news lately. So, tweeting as Talkmaster kind of sounds like a guy with a microphone and a ball gag, doesn't it? Jesus. I don't even know what. Tweeting today, Neil Bortz, on the one-year anniversary of the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Now, why did that happen again? It was probably socialists, wasn't it? It's just like what the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache said 70 years ago. Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten. This is the work of communists. Yeah, it was the socialists, the liberals, who caused Lehman Brothers. It couldn't have anything to do with predatory capitalism or anything like that, crony capitalism, anarcho-randianism. No. Couldn't be any of that now, could it? No. But anyway, this is the quote that was put out. President Obama spoke on Wall Street, and the purpose was, quote, to try to breathe new life into efforts to overhaul the financial regulatory system. In other words, trying to chase all the damn foxes out of the henhouse. If you know what I mean. So, naturally, Talkmaster Neil Bortz immediately tweeted, quote, well, he tweeted that this is what he said. Obama on Wall Street today. That's like sending a child molester to speak to a kindergarten class. Yeah. Hippers. I don't think I could ever succeed as a shock jock just trying to find the next outrageous thing to say. And again, that goes back to that model of conversation radio. I'm not here to shock you. I'm not here to thrill you or titillate you. If we together get a giggle once in a while, that's okay. But I don't feel a need to one-up anybody. But in right-wing radio, that's all it is. It's a constant attempt among these right-wing blatherheads, gas bags, be they what the corporate subsidized welfare queens behind microphones. That's what they are. Welfare queens. Corporate welfare queens. It's a constant attempt to one-up each other. You know, let's see, Limbaugh had Barack the Magic Negro, so then the Savage Wiener has to come out with something more shocking, so the Glenn Beck has to come out and say that Barack Obama is a racist. Well, Where does that leave poor talkmaster Neil Bort? Why, he has to call the President of the United States a child molester. But then again, this is the same guy who said that reforming the predatory American healthcare system is going to kill people. This is the same guy who said that people who are on unemployment are human parasitic garbage. This is a guy who referred to the victims of Hurricane Katrina and the resulting failures of the levees in New Orleans as debris who were chased out by the hurricane. Classy guy. Talkmaster Neil Bort. What purpose does that serve in the public discourse? Now, I admit I get a little animated now and then. But I don't, no matter how many brown people he ordered killed, I don't think I ever got around to calling George Bush a child molester. And, of course, this works on a number of levels because, you know, naturally we couldn't let that one speak to the children in that speech last week. So where is Neil Bortz's mind still on children? What do you think about when you think about children, Neil Bortz? And is there hand lotion involved? See how it works? That's how it works. It's disgusting, isn't it? It's absolutely repugnant. But this is simply further proof of the fact that the right wing is fresh out of ideas, fresh out of any attempt at a solution to problems that are very real in this country today and impact the lives of millions of human beings. And all they've got is a tawdry ad hominem attack. Because after all, you've got to do something to keep Bubba awake while he's parked on I-75 or I-85 down the connector in Atlanta. Because no matter how national he likes to tell people he is, Neil Bortz is still a local Atlanta gas bag. It's sad, isn't it? You want another example? A photograph and a post that's up over at Huffington under the politics tab by Rachel Weiner. It turns out that, you remember the big 9-12 Tea Party this past weekend? Ooh, it was going to be big, big, I tell you, big. Oh, people were going to come and teabag all over the mall in Washington. Just, it was going to be a spectacle. And it was. I mean, there was some spectacle to it. I saw a woman there who, had her Obama equals Hitler sign, which she quickly spun around to the other side. No socialism, no health care, as soon as she realized that the C-SPAN camera was on her. I'm not kidding. You remember a few years back when the Million Man March took place in D.C.? And all Flush Flimball could do... My friends, there were not that many Negroes in Washington, D.C. I promise you there were not. And he made sport of the statistical method by which the National Park Service and the Capitol Police and yada, yada, yada estimate the numbers of attendees. Well, guess what? Why would we be surprised? These are conservatives. These are Republicans. So naturally, they're going to lie about their numbers. They put out a photo. They put out a photo, the teabaggers did, of what they said was their rally. And boy, it sure does look like a big one. Yeah, you've got in the foreground, you've got the Washington Monument, in the far background, the Capitol of the United States, and in the middle, the mall is just packed with teeming humanity. God, it just looks like there's thousands, if not a million people there. All coming to take back their country from those people. I'm going to take back my country. There's only one problem with this photo. It's a lie. This photo. Because after all, in addition to not having any ideas, not having any solutions, not having any theories, not having any hope, not having any moral basis upon which to talk about how we fix the things that are wrong with this country, the Republicans are also pathological liars. So consequently, they went out. You remember this kind of happened. It happened sort of similar a week or so ago. Faces of Coal went out and got stock photos of people standing around being people standing around, and they bought them from istockphoto.com or whatever, and then put them on their website and said, these are the faces of Coal. And Rachel Maddow does such a lovely job of busting their chops for it. You remember that, don't you? Well, you know, from the party who hasn't had a good idea since 1860, they thought they'd come back to it again because they circulated a photo of some rally on the mall in Washington, D.C. that ain't theirs. How do you know? Well, it may seem glacial, but Washington, D.C. actually does change. And anyone who is intimately familiar with Washington, D.C. Knows that there are things you look for. I mean, for instance, if my colleague and chum and pal and guy that I really, really respect a lot and love being on the air with, Guy James, was to be looking at this photo, he would say in that lovely stentorian voice of his, why, Bob, this cannot be a picture of the teabagger rally. I can clearly tell that three molecules are gone off the cornerstone of the Air and Space Museum. Because that's how well Guy James knows Washington, D.C. I'm not making light of Guy James. Guy James knows Washington, D.C. But as it turns out, this particular photograph, and I do realize I'm talking about a photograph on the radio, and therefore we are heartily engaged in what David from Tennessee christened and has since become a fixture. I realize we're engaged in dancing about architecture. God, I just love that. Dancing about architecture. A dance to the Chrysler Building. It's incongruous. It makes no sense. We're dancing about architecture talking about photographs on the radio. But there's just... See, you got to remember, though, when you're talking about Republicans, conservatives, these patriotic types... You have to remember that you're talking about people for whom America never changes. Remember, these are the people who want America to just, damn it, why can't it be like Leave It to Beaver and everybody's nice and white? And Hugh Beaumont is all of our fathers. Why can't it be that way? We want nothing to change. We want it to always be the same. And, of course, they just sort of made the assumption that Washington, D.C., down around the area of the mall, is, in fact, always the same. But it isn't. Because in this particular photograph, if you were to look at it closely, as Rachel Weiner did over at Huffington Post, you would note that the photograph does not include the National Museum of the American Indian, which opened on September the 14th, 2004. Ergo, that ain't the teabagging crowd. Yeah, I know. Wingnut's lying again. Of course, the problem with the whole teabag protest was the fact that it was never grounded in any sort of popular basis to begin with. It was all cranked up, ginned up, phonied up, dummied up, rubed up, faked up, frauded up by well-paid lobby groups who were trying to use fear to protect. I mean, come on, it's a very, very simple proposition. In order to protect the corporate bottom line. Not protect the insurance agents out there on the street, not protect the paper shuffling people inside the companies, but rather to protect the CEOs and the high-ranking executives of the company, because, as we discussed on Friday, those are the people who are at least titularly threatened by all of this. Because it's their lobster lunches and their limo rides that are on the line. Not the brown bag lunch of the guy who goes to work or the woman who goes to work every day in a cubicle somewhere at Aetna or Cigna or God only knows where. No. It's the CEOs. And all of these things are ginned up. These AstroTurf events are ginned up and lied up and faked up in an attempt to protect our betters. Yeah, no kidding. And of course, you and I, we're sharp enough that, you know, we go over and bless Rachel Weiner's heart. She's certainly sharp enough to look at it and say, hey, this looks like it ain't real. How many people are there? Were there that many? Because see, that humongous crowd, apparently that was what lit Rachel Weiner up. That humongous crowd couldn't possibly have been the teabagger crowd. So she got in touch with a man named Pete Pieringer, public affairs. I'm a professional speaker. Don't try this at home. Public affairs officer for the D.C. Fire and Emergency Department. And Pieringer said no, and he's the one who said, by the way, this picture can't be from 2009. The teabag crowd only filled the Capitol grounds, maybe up to 3rd Street. According to Rachel Weiner, there were other attempts by the teabaggers to make the event bigger than it was, and I guess if one was a teabagger, one would want things bigger than they actually were. Organizer Matt Kibbe said on stage, ABC News has estimated a crowd of 1 to 1.5 million. There was only one problem with that. No, ABC News didn't. They were, come on, everybody, 1, 2, 3, lying! Because they are 1, 2, 3, liars! Because they are 1, 2, 3, repiglickins! That's what they do. But, you know, fake, phony, and fraudulent is their nature. I got a story here I saved over the weekend in the stack. That it turns out that the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity has yet another fraudulent letter on its hands. That brings the number to 14 now. This time through impersonating American military veterans. God almighty, have they no shame. Bob, the answer to that would be no, they don't. It was sent in June, this latest letter that was discovered. It was sent to try to influence, once again, Representative Tom Perriello, Democrat from Virginia, to try to get him to sign on to continuing to poison our country with clean coal. And it was sent on behalf of a local American Legion official in Rocky Mount, Virginia. Shh, don't tell the for-profit media, but this is probably a crime. This isn't a mistake made by Bonner and Associates. This is a crime committed by Bonner and Associates. One of 14 such crimes that have been discovered thus far. It went through the mails. It may actually be mail fraud. Thank you for listening to Concerns of Vets in Your District. On behalf of the American Legion Post, American Legion VA Post Number 6, you know, that's sleazy. That's sleazy beyond my ability to describe sleaze. June 11, 2009. Dear Congressman Perriello, on behalf of the American Legion VA Post Number 6, I'm writing because of two big concerns to our veterans. American energy independence and electricity costs. You're an important member of the Energy and Commerce Committee, and I have read where you are about to vote on environmental legislation sponsored by Congressmen Waxman and Markey. As veterans, members of my post and I have been willing to put our lives on the line to defend our country. Energy independence is important to American national security. Half our nation's electricity comes from coal. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Maybe it's coal-fired. I don't know. It's down to less than 42% now, boys and girls. Half of our nation's electricity comes from coal, the cheapest power for creating electricity. Really? They're charging for sunshine now? I'll be damned. And there's a bill on the wind? Who knew? America has enough coal right here in the continental U.S. to last for more than 200 years. We need to use our readily available resources and focus on using new technologies to make coal more efficient, therefore reducing greenhouse gases. In our state, there are over 10,000 jobs from coal, and 49% of electricity comes from coal. Please use your position to protect those jobs, establish America's energy independence, and encourage new cleaner technologies for coal use. Please, this is parts underlined, mind you, please make sure the Waxman-Markey bill includes provisions to promote American energy independence while protecting already crash-strapped constituents from increases in electricity prices. Thank you for listening to Concerns of Vets in Your District. Respectfully, and the name's blocked out, American Legion VA Post Number 6. Hoo-ah! Not a word of truth in it. It's a total forgery. If it had monetary value, it would be an utterance. As veterans, members of my post and I have been willing to put our lives on the line to defend our country. God, how just gut-emptying, sickening is a fraud like that. What a mockery of veterans who really did put their lives on the line. What a mockery. What disrespect. What profound disregard for the blood and the gore and the guts and the sweat and the tears that are represented by all those names on that humongous granite wall in Washington, D.C. But that's okay. Because they're repiglicans. And repiglicans don't give a damn about any sacrifice that was ever made on behalf of or in the name of anyone or institution from this country from its inception to the present, and they will not give a rat's rear end in the future either. Because they're repiglicans. Because it is how they are. They will literally mock the sacrifices of those who no longer have a voice. A repiglican will literally mock the hero dead of this nation if it means protecting the bottom line and the bank account and the that bulging wallet of the likes of Don Blankenship. That is what a Repiglican will do, because with Repiglicans, remember, it is always, 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 always party first. Country maybe, but always party first. Party on, Repiglicans. Party on, Bob. Well, let's see what's happening. Let's see what's happening on the telephone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin. What's up?
Yeah. You ever heard of the technology CGI? That's how they got the million.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Computer generated. Computer graphic. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how they got the million.
Well, the thing is, though, there's not even any CGI in that photograph, Kevin. I mean, it's just a photograph that is older than September 14th, 2004. Because there's no American Indian Museum in the photograph.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It's not even a real photograph.
Yeah. I want to jump back to our conversation we had last week regarding Barack Obama.
Okay, yep.
And, you know, I think I did offend a few people of what I said.
I don't know that they were necessarily offended. I think some people disagreed.
Disagreed or what have you. You know, I just want to say that people respect our president. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, coming from a point of view, you know, American point of view, again, we tend to shoot ourselves in the foot a lot of times. And, you know, like you, I forgot his last name was Van. The guy who was forced to step down.
Oh, Van Jones?
Van Jones. I think he was probably one of the strongest members of the administration. And, you know, we're constantly chipping away, you know, at a lot of this stuff. You know, it's like we're bending ourselves like a pretzel to suit these people, and it's like this party lost and then the tiny minority, and it seems like, to me, it seems like mid-2000s all over again when they said sit down and shut up. You know, it's like they're telling us the same thing anyway. You know?
Yeah, even though we're in the majority.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that I want to address that fool who yelled out liar.
Oh, you mean not really named Joe Wilson?
Oh, whatever.
Yes, Addison Graves Wilson.
Yeah. You know, it's like South Carolina just needs to secede. And I'm telling you, we need to start letting these states secede. But even though the reality is if we gave them permission to, they would never do it. Because they like their federal money coming in. It's just they want to keep it amongst themselves and their little interests. You know, it's, you know, it's very much a shame that institutionalized racism is so burnt into this country's DNA that, you know, and what we used to get with Bush, if you don't, you know, you may not respect him, but respect the office.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, well, or yeah, got to respect the office.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But it's, you know, I'm asking the same thing of why is he bigger now? Okay, fine. You don't like him because he's black? Okay, fine. But respect the office.
You know, I took real issue with that. When George Bush was in there, and I did that because I don't think the office has any authority that is not brought to it by virtue of the authority or the respect commanded by the occupant thereof.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just a shame that, you know, and again, it's just, you know, a bunch of bigots that are saying, basically telling him that, you know, you cannot tell me what to do.
Yeah.
You cannot tell me what to do.
But... That doesn't it run much deeper in this case? It's not the office that the right wing doesn't respect. They claim respect for the office. It is the fact that that one is in the office, Kevin.
Oh yeah.
That has them bananas.
Oh yeah. And you know, it's just it bothers. It really does. I cannot. You know, the double standard, and it's at a point where, you know, like I said, at times I am so concerned that, you know, because if you ever looked at, you should have seen Bonner, the Republican section looked like they wanted to lynch him. If you sat down and read the speech, and when they start showing the Republican part section of Congress, it looked like they wanted to lynch him, especially Bonner. You know, the one who's true calling is to be the mascot for Syracuse University.
Oh, you mean John Boehner?
Yeah. If looks could kill.
Barack Obama would have gone away in a basket. No doubt about it. But, you know, there was more than that. There was, you know, the guy whose name isn't really Joe, whose last name really is Wilson. There was the guy sitting there with his, he didn't say anything, he just had a sign in his lap, said, "What plan?" Oh, there were a bunch of them. And the fact of the matter is, nothing is going to make them respect Barack Obama, because their bigotry and their racism runs bone deep, Kevin. Bone deep. You know, the not really Joe, not really named Joe Wilson. You know, the reason he did what he did is because of who he is. He didn't suddenly decide to dislike Barack Obama because Barack Obama's a Democrat. This is a guy who worked for Strom Thurmond. This is a woman who called Ellie Washington, Strom's daughter, a liar when she came out and said that Strom was her daddy. And said it was a scurrilous attempt to bring dishonor upon an honorable man. Do you get what I'm getting at? This is a racism problem, not a political problem. Kevin? Oh, dear. Kevin, if you can hear me, I can't hear you, so try back. Maybe try back. In the meantime, we'll try this line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. So let me get this right. Dick Armey turned out to be as shriveled and not as big as he's been bragging about pretty much since he sicked back on this whole 9/12 thing. So this is where we stand, correct?
Exactly. Dick Armey's Dick Armey.
Yeah.
Was not as big as Dick Armey said said his Dick Armey was.
Yeah.
He was just wishing it was bigger.
Yeah, which pretty much puts it completely in tune with the Republicans these days, don't you think?
Oh,
that's what.
Absolutely.
That's why they carry these big old guns.
Right, because they are great big they're little compensators is what they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like, you know, the middle-aged guy that gets the, you know, the hot Corvette or whatever, you know, it's all about compensation because they don't have anything worth arguing about. It's just, we need to stop them. We need to stop them. That's it.
Exactly. But and what I was trying to get across with Kevin was, why? And I'm sorry, granted, they went after Bill Clinton tooth and toenail, and that was political. But they're going after Barack Obama with a special kind of viciousness that goes beyond anything they did to Bill Clinton. If they had a majority, if they had a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, there would be impeachment hearings underway over the czars. Or whatever else they could dummy up.
Oh yeah, because
the hatred they bear Barack Obama is at least 50% skin color.
At least, probably more. I mean, it's just, what can you say? They're throwbacks in this ascent. Because, I mean, this is the same garbage that, you know, I'm only 31 years old, but I know my history. I know what all the civil rights battle is, this whole thing right here. Because, oh, my God, they're black. Or, oh, my God, it's an Asian person. Or, oh, my God, you know, isn't one of the guys on their post, on their little hit list there is a Jewish person that they want to get out of Obama's cabinet or run of advisors?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, you know, got to bring back the anti-Semitism. I mean, because, you know, that of course is just ridiculously out of fashion. I don't know, 1945?
And that's the question. Are they throwbacks? Because if they're a throwback, that means that there is some element within Republican culture that is normal. Or is this them with the rubber mask off, Garrett? Is this them with are they throwbacks, or is this how they've always been?
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think they. What the Republican Party was, you know, theoretically founded on hasn't existed since Hartman says, like, the 1880s. I mean, it is the rubber mask off. I mean, there's probably a couple of oddballs that believe in the party of Lincoln and actually buy into the hype, but they're fooling themselves because it's this Beck, Limbaugh, you know, Wiener, you know, thing where they're just total hateful racist. They hate everybody except for themselves, and, you know, hell, they probably hate themselves too.
And if you want to get into the deep psychology of it, there's a serious amount of that that's involved, you know, self-hatred inside bigotry and racism, absolutely. Not to mention feelings of profound insecurity.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a reason why so many of us on the left, you know, kind of joke in our own quarters, and especially Sam Cedar, how he used to have the closet door sound effect when he'd mention certain Republicans, because I mean it's just that's how bad it is. It's like we assume that they have some skeleton in their closet because they hate so. With such vitriol that it's almost cartoonish.
Yeah, it is almost cartoonish. It would be cartoonish if there was something humorous about it. It would be cartoonish if it was something that wasn't real. But
yeah.
this is very real, very dangerous hatred. You know, this is idiots coming to unarmed meetings carrying guns. And you don't, you know, I don't know. Maybe these people who do that sort of thing are so wrapped up in their fetishistic approach to firearms that they've never been spoken to.
Bob.
How can I? Well, wait. See, I knew law enforcement guys, and they said, you know, you never bring that thing out. They said, you know, I never put this thing on in the morning before I come to work without the realization that it may come out and kill somebody today, that I may be forced to use it to bring an end to someone's life. There's an old theater rule, and I know this is really far afield from what the law enforcement reality was, but there's an old rule in theater that you do not introduce a loaded gun on stage without it going off at some point, because it just fundamentally violates everything that the audience expects.
Oh, of course.
And I think maybe it was Anton Chekhov who propounded that rule, and of course that would make sense. He was a genius and all that stuff. But yeah.
But I mean, it's so bad. I mean, because that nutball preacher in Phoenix there, apparently his parishioners yesterday, some of them were armed. Not just the one guy with the AR-15, but apparently they were, because they have the protests going on there, they were packing heat yesterday, from what I've heard.
Oh, I'm sure they were. They were flaunting the D.C. gun decision, among other things.
Yeah, but the whole point of it was to threaten the people that have been protesting them, because, oh yeah, the guy that's running that church is a hateful, you know, well, piece of junk. I mean, when you get down to it.
Yeah, he is. And frankly, within the last 8 years, if some member of Louis Farrakhan's group had done something similar, we would be having terrorism trials around the clock now, Garrett. It's a fact.
Oh, it's absolutely a fact. They were waiting for it. And for something to go wrong. And the thing is that they were using people that were, you know, on some level, you know, liberals, because of the fact is that every, you know, Farrakhan was more or less, you know, anti-Semitic, or at least said things that could be construed at it. And it was just, you know, they were waiting for it, because they had already ginned up the hate, because, I mean, one, he was black, but two, he said things that were going to rile up people. I mean, it's just how it is. I mean, I know it's the same thing with Ice-T. It's like, he was black and, ooh, he was a rapper. But Cop Killer, you know, for argue the merits of the song or anything like that. But the fact is that if he had been a white death rock guy, that song we'd never even have heard about it. But Ice-T was a rapper extraordinaire, so fire up the horses.
Yeah, because, again, he wants to kill our hero cops.
And it's like, I mean, and, you know, the funny thing is Ice-T's been on one of the Law & Order, whatever, one of the 20 million that is on the air, and it's like he's even heard from cops, like, you know, but Ice-T, we understand what you're talking about. We know what type of cops that you're talking about, because this is the whole point. I mean, that's what a lot of those, you know, the whole hardcore rappers in the early 90s were talking about. Many of them were from South California, oh my, and they were, you know, really railing on cops, because they saw corrupt cops, and they didn't get any apologies when it turned out that, you know, everybody realized that, oh wow, the LAPD, they're pretty corrupt.
Yeah, imagine that.
I mean,
Mark Furman, anybody? Mark Furman, hello?
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Cochran made his name on beating out corruption in the LAPD. That was his career before.
Yeah, what was it? Was the Rampart Unit, was that the Sheriff's Department or the LAPD?
Oh,
But I just remember reading all the just story after story after story of.
It's Daryl Gates and most of the people that you know were exposed as being corrupt are gone now, and it's still a cliche because I mean it was that widely prevalent.
And the thing is, it was something that had been talked about forever, simply because, among other things, going back to, I can cite Richard Pryor comedy albums back when albums were on vinyl and 8-track tape. Where he was doing routines about LAPD violence.
Oh, sure.
And that's, 75, 76, 77?
Yeah, pretty much all through the 70s, and there were he had a few in the late 60s, too, come to think of it.
So...
Yeah,
But no, just, you know, I think Kevin had a point, and I hated that I lost him. You know, this double standard they establish of, you got to show respect for the office. But they won't because their overarching hate for the man in the office precludes it. Because, you know, again, it's another case of what, Juanita cites so often, Garrett, you know, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a ripig licking.
Yeah.
Nothing. And you know, that in its own right, Garrett, is an extension of the philosophy that operates behind the shady, shadowy little dominionist, perhaps Christian Reconstructionist group, the family. Remember where, if you hike the Appalachian Trail and fly off business class to Argentina to get it on with your Argentinian mistress and blow out of your job for 5 days and anybody else in the world, that would be considered a voluntary quit. Well, as long as you're with the family, you come back there and you say, "Well, this is what I did." And, well, that's okay that you did that because you know God loves us better.
Well, yeah.
What?
Look at us. We got one of our senators that is in that freaking group, Ensign. And I mean, I've never particularly liked him. I mean, he's been a representative. I mean, back when he was a representative when I was a senior in high school, he spoke it in my government class, and it's like, I mean, it was, you could tell the BS going on. I mean, that made a, and that told me all I needed to know about Ensign was that appearance at our school, at my high school in 95. I mean, he was just that there. I mean, it's never shocked me ever since. If anything that shocked me is that he came within one extra, some voting shenanigans away from taking out Harry Reid. I mean, because he only lost by 480 votes. And that was before Nevada got the Diebold, voting machines. I mean, had it been after that point, he would have won.
Yep. Yep. It's disturbing, isn't it?
He had, and the worst part is that in 98, he had no business being that close to Harry Reid. I mean, I will rail on Harry Reid as good, well as anybody, but, I mean, Ensign in 98 had no business doing it. And, I mean, the scary thing is that if John Porter had not lost to Dina Titus last year, John Porter would be the number one choice to take on Harry Reid. And that guy, I mean, he's one of those Dick Cheney-looking guys. He looks just like Dick Cheney.
Ew. That's just creepy to think about.
Yeah, and I mean, he was mudslinging. The reason why John Porter lost is because he used all of the things that... all of the mudslinging tactics against Dina that Gibbons tried to use 2 years before. That's the only reason, because he was so unoriginal, he couldn't think up new sleaze to get up on Dina Titus. And Titus, she was you know, she was smart enough to realize, I ain't going to take this crap, and she took him head on in her ad. She even had her mother in one of her ads last year.
Wow.
Yeah, she totally shot Porter down. I mean, it doesn't hurt that we already were kind of figuring out that Gibbons was a dog lunch, but, I mean, Titus, you know, she did take on Porter.
And, well, that kind of fighting back. Well, look, what's the woman, I'm trying to think here, what's the woman's name that beat Liddy Dole in North Carolina?
Oh.
You remember when Liddy Dole came out and said, and I don't think she likes Jesus.
Yeah, I forget her name, too. I'm feeling dense for not remembering it. But, yeah, I mean, and she thought that she was going to cruise in that election.
Yeah, because all you got to do is get out and flog Jesus a little bit, and they'll come right now. See? No, because when the opposition comes back and says, what is this evil woman talking about? I teach Sunday school in the Presbyterian Church.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that.
But tone deaf is something. Tone deaf is something Republicans generally are. There's a certain tone deafness to. Let's see. I got a great example of it here. I saw this thing coming out. It was Friday night as the show was ending, Garrett. And I saw this story come out about Newt Gingrich. Talk about tone deafness. Newt Gingrich's always been famous for sending out these phony, baloney, bogus, dummied up, ginned up, faked up awards for, you know, if you send him $5,000, you'll get an award for being an American business genius or some equal bit of, you know, garbage. Well, he had a little oopsie. He has an organization, Newt does, called American Solutions for Winning the Future. You know, because Newt's always been into language, remember? He's the one who said to use the word child molester in the same sentence with the word Democrat and not to call it the Democratic Party, but to call it the Democrat Party so you could focus on the rat. Okay.
Which is an old line too, because McCarthy used that.
Right, but Gingrich picked up on it, and he loves to play with language, and he loves to be real cute with that kind of stuff, Garrett. So naturally, he's got this dummied up award. He's got the Entrepreneur Year of the Year award. And American Solutions for Winning the Future sent a fax out to Allison Vivas, okay, informing Allison Vivas that she had been chosen a 2009 Entrepreneur of the Year award by the Business Defense and Advisory Council, the BDAC. It said, among other things, this is just darling, Newt would like to arrange a private dinner with you at the historic Capitol Hill Club on the evening of October 7th, 2009 in Washington. You'll dine privately with Newt at this exclusive venue, and he'll take the occasion to present you with your well-deserved award and have your photo taken together. This tremendous honor is a testament to your... Now, bear in mind, he probably sent 50,000 of these things out, okay? This tremendous honor is a testament to your success in bidding... Your business and recognition of the risks you take to create jobs and stimulate the economy. As an award winner, you'll be on the ground floor as Newt and his council begin the work to turn this country around. Newt's looking forward to hearing your ideas on getting the economy moving again and getting your feedback on his plans over dinner. Allison Vivas, again, she runs a business called Pink Visual.
Oh, boy, what does it do?
It's a porn DVD superstore.
Nothing quite as American as the porn.
And so they quickly rescinded their invite. And Pink, what's the name of this outfit again? Pink Visual said, Allison was disappointed to receive a call this morning from an ASWF representative stating that the facts had been sent to her inadvertently. We're not entirely clear on how one inadvertently sends a fax to the right person at the correct fax number, so our sense is that this is damage control on the part of a group that is having second thoughts about either recognizing the excellent work of a porn company entrepreneur in light of their own conservative political and social orientation, or having second thoughts about their promotional methodology and communication proposals.
Or, more likely, what happened is that they mixed up the numbers, at least in that one instance, they mixed up the numbers for where they buy their personal porn stash, and, you know, well, you know, we kind of got into the, you know, you're a great American.
Wrong Rolodex, I think is what you're saying. Wrong Rolodex.
Yeah.
No. Use the Christian Rolodex, not Newt's personal Rolodex, okay? Can we get it straight next time?
And besides, note to Newt, you can find porn for free on the Internet. The Internet is for porn. Oh, never mind. He probably wouldn't want to see Avenue Q, so, you know, scratch the Internet is for porn.
Hey, Garrett, wonderful conversation. Thanks for calling in this evening.
No problem.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Las Vegas. That's our pal, Garrett. Yeah, we're not entirely clear on how one inadvertently sends a fax to the right person at the correct fax number. But, you know, it's okay if you're a Republican. You don't say, oh, well, what a bunch of greedy little dumbasses we are. We sent out a blast fax, and one of them landed on the desk of a porn entrepreneur, and, well, you know, shame on us. No, it was inadvertent. And we didn't really mean to tell her that it was a testament to her success in building her business and recognition of the risks that she takes to create jobs and stimulate the economy. Oh, no. That was inadvertence, what that was. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Maura. Senator Kay Hagan, Democrat of North Carolina, was the one that Libby, whatever, it said, yeah. She likes them atheists. Yeah, that one. And one promise as we go through the show this evening, and we got a bunch of stuff to catch up with. Your calls, of course, are always welcome. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. Or toll free, if you need to do it that way. You can reach us at 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Either way, email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com, but I have a promise for you. And this is as much as I'm going to breach that promise. We are not, in the next 2 hours of this program, we are not going to talk about the Video Music Awards, and we are not going to talk about Kanye West. Or whoever the child radio country star was that got upstaged by Kanye West. Not gonna do it. Nagade. Okay? Just say it. There is some other stuff to talk about. Did you happen to see the New York Times article this weekend? I know John was talking about it last night on his show. On water. And the flagrant violations of the Clean Water Act that take place all over the United States of America. We could talk about that. Maybe you won't drink the water. Maybe you'll have a nice cool glass of milk. No, I'm going to ruin that for you too. I'm sure Reverbo's just running around his house going, get off the milk, Bob! Don't ruin my milk! Probably will. And speaking of milk and milk cartons, faces coming to a milk carton near you soon, quite possibly. We never know. So that's all coming up right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice, right here on the Horn.
I heard you on the wireless back in 52, lying awake and dancing, tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Indeed, indeed. About 8 minutes past the hour of the second hour of the program tonight, getting the week well started. And just a program note or two, because of work requirements, Guy James will not be live this week, but he is busting, absolutely busting, I tell you, to get back to being behind the microphone next week. These are the pressures of trying to keep all these plates in the air at the same time. And I think you know a little bit of what that's like. So, no Guy this week. And additionally, no me on Thursday. You know, until middle school football season is over, I will be a guy who is out on Thursdays. Just because, got to go watch Ferg play and watch Doodle cheer. That comes with the parenting turf, if you know what I mean. Before I ruin anybody's evening or anything, I will, let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
So I heard my name called in relation to some sort of what?
Well, no, I don't know. Maybe you enjoy a nice cold glass of milk every morning or something, but you won't when I'm done.
Well, you know, it reminds me of that Saturday Night Live skit, I think, with Belushi or somebody. They're talking about the Milk Council. This is just like light years ago. He's something about how, boy, I tell you, nothing gives me like can stop my heart and clog up my arteries better in the morning than I'm not. Warm glass of milk. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
They're holding up that glass.
I thought maybe you were going to go with, it's a floor wax. No, it's a dessert topping. Hey, stop fighting. It's both.
It is both. Want to play a game, a fun game?
We can.
Okay. Okay, the category is South Carituckee. Can they raise the sleeve bar any higher? That's the category.
South Carituckee.
That's what I, what the heck, you know. Let's try to dress up that pig as best we can. So, let's see. The question is, who recently resigned? A somewhat of a celebrity recently resigned from a post, political post, that great state. The answer needs to be in the form of a question.
Would that be the lieutenant governor?
Oh, damn. No, that's not right. You get another chance. Where's your bell? Here, I'll hit that for you. Nope, not the lieutenant governor.
Oh, gee, Alex, I'm stumped.
And it is not the rider of the Pampas himself, Mr. Sanford, who seems to be hanging in there.
That hiker of the Appalachian Trail, yes.
Man, he just will not...
Yeah. Speaking of which, though, I did get to catch, I guess it was replay. I got to catch a little bit of his press conference in which he excoriated the liberal media for creating this problem for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean it was the straw right into the bad tequila bottle. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Now, see, the liberal media is being very irresponsible about this. Media's going out there and they're fueling this here fire. Making people think that I did something wrong when I flew to Argentina business class. Why, there have been South Carolina officials that have flown business class since the 1950s.
Well, the nerve of the press actually starting to do their job. Gee, like it's difficult to...
Well, I love the diversion that it's about the business class and not about abandoning your post for 5 days and slipping off to... Do a little bit of the old in, out, and out with one's Argentine mistress.
It is. It's always about the money with these folks. They know the cost of everything and the value of nothing, as they say. Yeah, that is priceless.
Swallow a mountain and gag on a gnat.
Well, I love that, the more I think about it. That's really the only issue, is that he didn't fly, you know, it didn't just go, you know, regular to tourist class like the rest of us. Yeah. It is all blown over by now.
No, don't say blown, okay? You can't, no, not in this context. You can't say that.
While we're on the subject of pornography, always when you, I bought that thing, and I just, look, I hit that bell all day long. So it gives you the idea of what kind of a life I have. But anyway.
Well, if I had one, I would too.
Yeah, well.
You're just John Henry, the bell ringing man.
I guess that would be me. But where were we here? Oh yes, pornography and the Republicans, always an amusing combination. So let's get back to try to answer our question here, so you can possibly move on to the bonus round, okay?
Okay.
I really want to see you get there, because there's a lovely lounge suite waiting for you. Let's see, who could it be in South Carolina? We could talk about, they have such a incredibly satisfying array of politicians down there. You just don't even know where to start. But since the topic is porn, could it have something to do with someone on the, oh, I don't know, Board of Education?
Oh, why, it could. It could.
It, you know, it could. Yeah, yeah. A woman?
Yeah, okay.
How about the, not just any woman, but an epic woman here, the chairwoman of the South Carolina State Board of Education. One who, by the way, believes...
Now, was she posing or looking?
Well, she was doing both, I guess. It's hard to say, really, but it was definitely something juicy was going on. I'll just read this to you, or well, I'll do it for you again. Yes, Bob, who was Kristen McGuire?
Kristen McGuire?
Yeah, resigned her post. I'll just sort of paraphrase this. Resigned her post shortly before a news source down there published a piece claiming that she is a prolific author of hardcore erotic fiction on the internet.
Wait! Oh no! Stop it! There's no pictures. Oh. She's doing it with the dirty words.
There's a picture of her. She's, you know, I don't like to judge people by the way they look. You know me. The incredible thing about her, of course, is, well, it's exactly what you would expect. She, of course, is a homeschooler. She believes Jesus rode on dinosaurs. She's an absolute...
Died for her sins, and she has a personal relationship with Jesus Christ?
A vocal anti-evolutionist. And this was, of course, when she was elected on this. People, you do get what you vote for, people. Her appointment was, quote, hailed as a victory for social conservatives and cheered on Christian blogs and websites across the Southeast.
Oh, do tell, please tell me you've got an excerpt.
I wish I did. I had to find this pretty quick. Whoa, here, wait, we may have something here. Yes, there are samples, but I don't want to go to them. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will send you this website, and you can have fun with it.
Oh, I will, because I'll... You know what? I don't know if she'll participate, but I may. This is just the promise that I will make. Because... Let me make sure she's not around listening. Agnes has a fabulous porn voice.
That can come in really handy. Look what I... Look at all the mileage I'm getting out of my bell. I'd love to have a porn voice to go with it.
Yeah, and so... You know, maybe I can get her to come back here, and we'll just take a couple of minutes of right-wing porn. What's the woman's name again?
The woman's name is, here she is, Kristen McGuire. I mean, you can't get higher on the state board than her. This is chairwoman elevation we're talking about here. Well, in the past tense, of course, she is. What else we got here? The article also alleges that McGuire engaged in lap dances in bars, public indecency,
Okay, I'm gonna go totally sexist right now. I don't want to know about the lap dances until I've seen the picture.
Here's a little excerpt, and let's see. You know, as with all the everybody, you know, we've been through this before. Have you ever met a truly funny conservative Republican? No.
Not that wasn't not trying to be.
Or just, you know, they laugh.
Ah, Bridget Keeney is her nom de plume.
Oh, look at you go. Now, this is so good. He reached up to loosen his ties. He walked to his desk. Sitting in the middle of the blotter on his desk was his Man of the Year statue with an envelope leaning against it. He picked up, hey, we got to get to do this. Yeah, I can't do this. But anyway, here comes Lauren, Dressed to Kill. We have a lot of F words coming up. But anyway, no doubt that I'm going to guess that she can't do porn at all, that she's going to be a total failure at this. Just like there are failures at any sort of sophisticated, not that porn is sophisticated, it's pathetic, but it can be, I suppose, somewhat amusing if you, with a touch of irony, but.
Oh, I'm just sitting here looking for some, I'm sitting here looking at potential titles for her porn movie to star Jenna Jameson in the fairly near future.
Oh, God. I'm surprised you weren't on top.
No, I missed this one. This is one of those moments where I'm just loving being on the show and you know, having you show me. It's like Christmas, Reverbo.
I know. And living below the Mason-Dixon line, it is Christmas every day. It's a gift, as they say. Will South Carolina have for us next week? I mean, how can you top this?
I guessed it was the lieutenant governor because he got outed a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, there's trouble. He's got some issues going with him, too. They don't want him to succeed Stanford because he has, no one's happy with him either.
He's got a real bad case of the gay.
Oh. That's a death sentence for those people.
So, potential film titles.
Let's have a few here.
Debbie Does Dinos.
Yeah.
The Intelligent Designer in Miss Jones.
Perfect.
Young Earth, Young Love.
Wherever you are, that's where I want to be. I can't move on my computer fast enough and hold a cell phone.
Creation Flirtation.
Nice. A little kind of soft core there, but nice.
Miss McGuire and the Sire.
Yeah, now we're getting somewhere.
Creationists Gone Mild.
What? I mean, how can you become...
Ooh! Saw the photo! Ooh!
Uh-oh. What photo?
Well, it's just a photo of Kristen McGuire.
Yeah, there she is. Is she clapping her hands? Is that the one you're looking at?
Yes. And she's wearing something that looks like a jacket made out of a blanket.
That's the one I'm looking at.
Are those like Christmassy designs on it or something?
I don't know. And let's look at her and see if we can see the salacious porn woman under this this mask of conservatism here.
Oh, my inner eyes are burning.
Hard to tell. But
No. There's another word you can't use in this story.
What's that?
I'm not going to say it. You can't make me.
What letter does it begin with?
You said it was hard to tell.
Okay. Well, it's difficult.
There we go. See, you can do it.
One thing I can tell you, and I'm real good at this. We couldn't live with her for 2 seconds. One of us would be dead. That's all I can tell you. Real quick here, I was in D.C. last week. Oh, I got to mention this. You know, I mean, does anybody look cooler than the vice president in a Hawaiian shirt?
You know what?
He says hi, by the way.
Now, hey, Joe. Tell him I want my Hawaiian shirt back. He borrowed that, you know.
I took care of it. But what I'm wondering really quick is, I couldn't listen. Obviously, guys were just, the phone line must have been burning. What was it? Wednesday night when Obama gave the healthcare speech, what was the basic feedback on your from your show? That he sold out, or were people trying to find hope in this, or what?
I got an unhappy email from somebody saying that I should never, ever, ever, ever criticize or make light of Arianna Huffington. And that, let's see, I'm a loser because I don't really want health care to pass.
Someone accused you of this?
Yes.
Oh. Maybe it was Rob Kincaid, your evil twin on that other show.
Yeah, it may be. Maybe. Or Reuben Kincaid, who was the manager of the Partridge Family. Maybe. Don't know.
Well, probably was Thursday. His talk was 8 o'clock. I listened to the whole thing, and I don't know what to make of it.
That's the darndest thing. I mean, on the one hand, I come back to the air on Friday, Reverbo, and everybody says, yeah, it was a great speech. And, yeah, it was a great speech. Yes, he gives great speeches. We know now.
Oh, yeah.
Don't think we ever doubted it, except for the really bad one that he gave in Charleston, West Virginia, that I was present for when he was... You know, I guess polishing up his speech making. I guess we're the trial run of the Broadway show in Buffalo now, politically speaking. It was a bad speech. But anyway, no, this doesn't go on the highlight reel. This doesn't make the air check reel. But anyway, so everybody, it was a great speech, and everybody was saying, well, you know, I think it certainly sounds to me like he wants some kind of public option, blah, blah, blah. So what happens? After a positively orgiastic day of watching college football, and by that I mean I just watched college football till I was sated on college football Saturday. Okay, I just did.
I used to do that, and then I went down to South America and got a special treatment, and I don't need to do that.
And you're all better now? Yes. But anyway, so you know, Sunday I get up and putter around and click onto a couple of the Sunday bobblehead shows, you know, before I go over to NFL matchup or whatever.
Oh, you have it bad, huh?
Yeah. Well, I can get through a Sunday easier than I can get through a Saturday. College is my problem. I can quit the NFL anytime I want to. See, I really can.
My cousin Larry could stop drinking anytime he wanted to, only he didn't want to.
Didn't want to. See, that's it. But anyway, so I'm watching the bobbleheads. You know, this week with George Snuffleupagus meets the nation, whatever.
Yeah.
And they got the same people on both shows. I personally think that Bill Gates' boys have been hard at work in the basement of somewhere in D.C. creating a cloning device because these people are on at the same time. Then they're the same people. But lo and behold, I got these bobbleheads talking. And Agnes is standing there watching me, and she's watching the blood rise into my face and my face turn all just, you know. And they said, well, can we finally say that the public option is dead now? Well, yes, Jane, I think we can. And did Barack Obama kill the public option? Well, no, George, I think it's more like he's going to let the Senate kill it for him. Anyway, I was right down the rabbit hole again. What? Huh? We were all listening to the same speech, right? And of course they came around to the obligatory question about the guy who's not really named Joe but is named Wilson, who called President Obama a liar. You know, that what's his name? Artemis Graves Wilson, the Thaddeus Graves, I don't know. Addison Graves Wilson. Yeah, you'd call yourself Joe too, wouldn't you? Newt Gingrich said, well, yes, he shouldn't have said that. But, of course, I remember when Democrats booed George Bush when he talked about Social Security. Isn't there a difference?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, okay, then let's just go. All right, Newt, we understand the standard now. Addison Graves Wilson can drop the calling him a liar and just call him what he really wants to, okay? Will that be all right with you, Newt? Will you come out and say, well, they booed George Bush when Addison Wilson comes out and calls him...
Well, sure, there's no difference between a spitball... And an M16.
Spitball and a snowball with a rock in it. They're both spherical.
That's right. I don't know. I heard the whole speech, and it was an interesting speech because he is great at this. I mean, he had me going for a while, then I was pissed off at him. Then I liked where he was going, and then I thought he sold us down the river again. And then at the end, he was, he is such a genius at making speeches. You wish that was his job, but of course it's not. I don't know. Maybe it is. I think the Senate's going to... I think this thing is doomed anyway. I don't have
it. See, that's where I am. And you're the one that accuses me constantly of bringing you down.
Oh.
Well, you just said something... I don't like going there, Reverbo. But I keep getting this feeling that I've paid my quarter and I'm on my way to see this way to see the egress.
Somebody, I was listening to NPR today for a little while, his Talk of the Nation thing, and there was someone, because they were talking about decorum in American government in the House, and what constitutes. When you go over the line and when it's just, how bad the ridicule can get in this country, what the things are, and all this kind of stuff. And, yeah, presidents, FDR took just a whole trainload of crap, and Lincoln took a vat of crap, and they're going on and on about it. But somebody called up, and I really think this is an interesting point. They were talking about, with our friend Wilson. You just would have wished that Obama would have just stopped and said, what did you say? And see what he would have done. If he would have, escalated it. He would have said, I called you a liar. I mean, you just wish he would have stopped and just called him out, don't you? But anyway, getting off the track.
Yeah, and...
I'm going to pull up and...
No, I... You do. What did you just say? You want to say it again?
Yeah.
Now that you've interrupted me, let me stop the speech for a minute. I want to hear everybody say it. I want everybody to hear you say it. Say it again, nice and loud, Congressman. Say it nice and loud.
Wait till you get all the TV cameras on your face. Let's hear it. Anyway, a person made a great point, and that was that the whole context of this sort of everything changed since Reagan. Well, I'm going to go over ground we already know. But the point was that everything had changed since this whole new, and I think Albert likes to use that word, paradigm, and maybe it would apply here. The concept that government is evil. And we know when that started,
the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
You got it. And that is what is directing and informing and, dare we say, inspiring these jackasses who think they're so clever to essentially, I think you're just being as un-American as you can be. What we're dealing with are people who think that the American system of government sucks. It is evil, and it should be destroyed, and if so, I can yell liar to the President of the United States, who, by the way, we invited to speak to us. That's how that works.
Well, there is talk of the House passing something saying that, he's just not a very nice person.
I see. There are all these cool things I found out, how in Prime Minister Gordon Brown, he is not a... he is the head of government in England, and the President of the United States is the head of state. There's all these cool distinctions that I learned.
That's very true.
Know about this. And so it is entirely different to call the head of state a liar in front of the world. It's way different than just calling, because the prime minister is a member of the House of Commons. He is one of them. But the president of the United States is not a member of that House of Representatives.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Not even close. He's as close as you can get to a king, as Jefferson thought we better get, but he does. There is some kind of monarchy type of thing with the president. He is not.
He is referred to as the first magistrate in early writings, and therefore it is proper to say that there is something magisterial about the presidency.
Okay. And also something interesting was, I guess, starting with Jefferson, I don't know, and then for like the next 130 years, there really was no, like, the president didn't address Congress. He wrote out a statement, and that was...
Yeah, literally mailed it in.
Yeah, they didn't want us in front of it. They didn't want this whole monarchy. He didn't like the look of it. And then I guess Woodrow Wilson cranked it up, and they've been doing it that way ever since. But you know, I just thought all that stuff was kind of interesting. People, the difference between the parliament and our thing. Because yes, our president is actually the head of state.
Oh, so
anyway,
I got to drag you back into the quagmire for a minute, Roberto.
I'm comfortable there.
Okay, we're going back to Ms. McGuire for a second. I'm just completely taken with this story. Another former staffer, this sent to me by John Fox, another former Sanford staffer, because apparently this news article deals with several Sanford staffers, another former Sanford staffer tells Fitz that McGuire once unbuttoned her blouse. Now, remember, think about that photograph you've seen of the woman in the Christmas tree skirt blanket jacket, clapping her hands.
Nothing good can come of this, but keep going.
Another former Sanford staffer tells Fitz that McGuire once unbuttoned her blouse and hiked up her skirt in front of him to show off her see-through light blue panties. The incident allegedly occurred not at a bar, but inside the governor's office at the unoccupied desk of First Lady Jenny Sanford, no less.
Just how many vodka tonics do you have to have before you start doing stuff like this?
Woo! Yeah.
Man, alive.
Conservative, yeah. Values, public servants gone wild.
Oh, and family values public servants don't gone wild. They're the wildest kind.
Yes.
Oh, God. I know. This is going to be great. We can't let this one go. And by the way, I haven't read that she wants to spend more time with her family yet.
And her family had better hope that she doesn't. I have a quote here. I fantasize about being the second female in an MFF threesome, where the other two are in a committed relationship. I'd like to focus on pleasure in her and enhancing their intercourse.
I am feeling really creepy right about now. And I'm fairly liberal and progressive myself.
Yeah, bear in mind, as John points out, she was on the South Carolina Board of Education, but she homeschooled her own kids. Well, she just didn't want them going to school and getting on that filthy internet. She knows.
Oh, yeah. How did... Folks, you actually have to... You pull the lever. Admittedly, the machinery is hackable, but let's just, for the sake of this argument, just say that it's fair and clean. You used the word staff earlier. Did you...
Oh.
Did you use the word staff or staffer?
Staffer. Staff.
Staffer.
No, staff. I use staff. No, staffer. Staffer. I just checked here. Another former Sanford staffer.
I just was checking. Because I don't, yeah, maybe better leave that one alone, too.
Oh, this thing is just catching fire, Reverbo.
I think we should let everyone just run with this.
We now have her resignation letter.
excellent.
And you know what? You were wrong.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because if she was an honest person, it was, many of you know by now that I have been accused of being a very tawdry, very dirty, dirty rotten woman. No. Many of you know that I have been carrying an ever-increasing burden with regards to my parents' health. Finally, last week, as I mapped out with my mom and her physician what our lives will look like for the next several months, it became clear that there is no way that I can adequately meet my family's and parents' needs while being a conscientious member, she said member, let alone chair of the State Board of Education. The math simply doesn't work. Which math? The one plus committed relationship? I reluctantly reached the decision to resign from the State Board of Education. I tendered my resignation to the governor on Friday so he could appoint someone who can fully participate in the important discussions and policy decisions that are in the immediate future of the board. It has been an honor to serve with all of you. The combined experience and passion around the board table is amazing. There is a camaraderie and a unity of purpose that has allowed room for respectful disagreement and constructive discussions in which the opinions and wisdom of all members are both sought and heard. I'm certain that the students of South Carolina are better for the investment that all of us have made to this end. While I regret not finishing my term as chair, I'm proud of the work that the board has accomplished this year. I am confident that you will finish the year strong under Chairman Moore's leadership with the continued support of the State Department of Education. I ask for your understanding as my family and I enter this next phase of our journey. One day I hope to again partner with many of you to continue to improve education for our state's children.
Get off the stage, will you? God, you can see she is prolific. Just say
you need to spend more time with your family and leave, sweetheart, and take your see-through undies with you.
Even if some wonderful radical hackers just pimp this woman out of a job, and none of this is true, all the better. This is priceless.
Well, I don't think this is on the same level as did Glenn Beck rape and murder a young girl in 1990. It sounds like these people have the goods. But you mentioned a little bit ago, Reverbo. You mentioned a little bit ago. You referred to South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I have the Tucky end of this whole thing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I've got a Kentucky story that was sent to me, and a little bit more grim, shall we say, sent to me by our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest. There's a fella who is, of course, a repig-licking, who is a former member of the Kentucky legislature. He's a family values conservative. He is a former gubernatorial candidate. Again, in Kentucky, his name is Steve Nunn.
Okay.
He was at one point affianced to a young lady, 29 years old, named Amanda Ross.
Okay.
This past Friday, she was found shot to death outside her home in downtown Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, my.
So the cops immediately began searching for the guy that she'd been trying to protect herself from for a while. You know, domestic violence charges, things like that.
Sure.
The cops went looking for Steve Nunn, age 56. And they found him at the edge of the Hart County Cemetery, where his parents are buried. He had placed mementos on his parents' graves and then slit his wrists. Along the way toward being apprehended, however, he picked up 6 counts of wanton endangerment of a police officer after he fired off a few rounds of a .38 caliber handgun when officers began arriving at the cemetery.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, and here's the buried lead from the story, and it's a McClatchy story. Here's the buried lead. No charges have been filed in the slaying as of this past Friday.
Not enough suspicion on Mr. Nunn, evidently.
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R.
So he didn't, they caught him before he ran out of, he emptied himself of blood. He's still breathing, is that the deal?
Well, or he's a Republican and screwed up the wrist slitting. You know, there's the kind that you can, you know, bandage up the wrist, and then there's the kind you don't get over.
I can see that. Before I do any go to the grand jury, I'm going to need some more evidence. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. He is the son. He's the son of the late Governor Louis B. Nunn, who was a candidate for governor in 2003. Oh, no. He was a candidate, too. He's Louis Nunn's son, who was a former governor of Kentucky, and he himself was a candidate for governor in 2003. So he went to Louis B. Nunn's gravesite.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, interestingly, though, further down in the report, it says, they say that Nunn offered no resistance, apart from, you know, that whole unloading the 38 caliber handgun thing. He was lucid and talking all the way to the hospital, according to Barron County Sheriff Chris Eaton. He's fine, said Barron County Sheriff Chris Eaton. He's fine. He's talking and stuff like that.
Yeah,
he's been friend. The sheriff there has been friends with Mr. Nunn for about 20 years. He's fine talking and stuff like that.
Talking and stuff.
And stuff, yeah.
Other than pointing a loaded firearm at peace officers and pulling the trigger, he really didn't put up much of a score.
No. But see, when you get down around that neck of Kentucky, the squeezing off a few rounds, no big deal. I used to love to go and see the rooms at the historic Talbot Tavern in Bardstown, where there were murals on the wall painted by the Crown Prince of France in exile back in the early 1800s. And back then, the sheriff of Nelson County, not Barron County, but Nelson County, sheriff of Nelson County, Kentucky, was fast friends, bosom buddies, with a couple of siblings, last name of James. Missouri boys.
Yeah.
Jesse and Frank.
Yeah, sure.
And so they were holed up in the Talbot Tavern one evening, getting all liquored up on some of that, because when you get down to Nelson County, Kentucky, you into some fine liquor. And they were getting all loaded up on some of the local hooch and got sublime drunk. There was a big wall mural on one side. And bear in mind, this is a hotel room, okay, of small size. This is, you know, pre-indoor plumbing and all that stuff. And on one wall was a mural of Don Quixote tilting at the windmill, as painted by the Crown Prince of France in exile, whose name was Louis Philippe, I do believe. And it had been on the wall there for about 50 years. Maybe 60. It was art by then. But the sheriff of Nelson County and one of the James boys, or maybe both of them, drinking the local hooch, decided it was time for target practice with their pistols. And began shooting at the wall. And it is a fine testament to the quality of that Nelson County hooch that they seldom hit the giant tree in the middle of the wall. And I don't think they harmed Don Quixote one iota. A stray did go into one of the masts of the windmill. So, you know, you get liquored up in Kentucky. Things happen.
And if you need some churching up, you can get that, too. Here's an idea for you. And this will, I don't know if you've ever thought of planning a, not a remote necessarily, but some kind of a, let me put it another way. I think that the horn we should make have a road trip to the Creation Museum.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
What I'm saying is if you go, I will meet you there. And we could be coming from the Toledo, Dayton area, Cleveland, Columbus, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, or Louisville, Lexington areas. They're open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and on the weekend. They're in Petersburg, Kentucky, and they would be happy to see them.
There's only one problem. I really militate at the idea of giving that old fraud any money. We'd have to go in as journalists.
Well, I was hoping we could all wear... I wanted to wear my horn blazer.
Well, absolutely.
Well, I'm critic at large. I mean, I already have the...
Yes, you your horn blazer and your mandatory embroidered Hawaiian staff shirt underneath.
Oh, yeah, I've got everything. I think I ought to let me write in. But I don't know how you can go through your whole life and not visit this place. It certainly inspired our Kristen, whatever. What is her name again?
McGuire.
Yeah, Kristen McGuire. Well, evidently, you'll never forget her name. But
okay, I gotta come clean. I've got a secret crush on her now.
Look at her again here. I'm just getting some very strange thoughts. I don't know. Now, well, she can dedicate way more of her time to moving those nimble fingers across the keyboard now.
Fingers.
Yeah. I don't. Do you want to live in a country where basically a whole bunch of people hate our form of government? I don't.
No, I want to run those people out of my country. I want people in my country who want to work together to make our country better, who actually like the form of government.
There are people who are...
Or who see something in the form of government worth working on and worth keeping. Because I think you and I both acknowledge, Reverbo, that the form of government we have here is flawed.
Well,
and it doesn't, you know, I think back to that Neil Gabler article from a few months ago that Dr. Bill sent us, where he talked about the fact that our form of government isn't really cut out to deal with major crises. It's cut out to keep government from screwing up in the first place. And so it probably needs a little tweaking. Just tweak.
It probably does. There's too many people buying into the notion that the loudmouth at the end of the bar represents some kind of a national sample, represents some kind of a populist statement. There's too many people who are, you know, there's millions of us in the middle screaming, but nobody sticks a microphone in our mouth.
Right.
So it just looks like that jerk off at the end of the pew or at the end of the bar or at the back of the bus screaming his stupid freaking head off represents, you know, the national, what's the word we're looking for here? Consensus. And it's just such a, God, that's what's killing us. Anyway, good topics tonight.
Oh, and you are entirely responsible for them, and I still haven't ruined your glass of milk in the morning.
No, you haven't. Would that be, do you still drink milk, by the way?
Yeah, once in a while.
Once in a while?
And I have some in my coffee.
Yeah, the would you drink the high test, or is it more of a 2% or 1%?
No, considering the amount that I do consume, it is my one concession. You know, I gave up, you may remember quite some time back, I gave up Velveeta. So I just like and I'm already decaffeinated, so coffee is not as good as it could be otherwise, unless you're getting Bob Alexander's stuff from Super Beans. But
say no more. You're not a saint, and you don't need to be.
So I drink decaf, and I make it palatable with a little bit of whole milk.
You're entitled to that.
No, and so this article creeped me out, too.
Yeah.
And what it boils down to, yeah, see, you thought you were going to get away, didn't you?
It's trying to.
Yeah, no, you can't leave. No, this has to do with something, a mutant. you want to hear a conversation about milk that begins with the word mutant, don't you, Riverboat?
Very badly, yeah.
A mutant protein has invaded the world's dairy supply. The protein is called A1 beta-casein, And it's trade groups, of course, you know, lobby groups for milk, you know, the people with the mustache ads. And oh, that stuff's harmless. But a growing body of research implicates A1 beta-casein in diabetes, heart disease, autism, and schizophrenia. And thousands of years ago, apparently there was a cow that is now referred to as Cow Zero. And
Cow Zero?
Yes,
that sounds like a rock band. That sounds like a punk rock band. I love it.
It does. It does. And there may be one. Cow Zero and its offspring produced milk in which the amino acid histidine occupies the 67th position of the beta-casein protein found in milk solids. In non-mutant milk, the amino acid proline occupies that position. In the non-mutant original form of the A2 protein. And today, the average vessel of milk contains milk from many cows with a mixture of both A1 and A2 beta-casein. Or casein, I don't know. But it all centers on the work of a guy named Keith Woodford, who is a professor of farm management and agribusiness at Lincoln University in Christchurch, New Zealand. And he's got a book out called Devil in the Milk.
Uh-oh, I knew we were heading here.
And he's basically analyzed 100 peer-reviewed studies to present his theory that A1 milk poses substantial health risks. And basically, he says that there are links to autism and schizophrenia, correlations in population studies and support from animal studies. But there's very little research on human population. Lots of rats, though. Okay, and rats being mammals, they are milk drinkers. And most particularly in this instance, a study. Let me get down here. Here it is. Countries with the highest levels of A1 in their milk also have the greatest incidence of type 1 diabetes and heart disease.
Oh, there you go.
So they went and studied them some rats. One group of rats was fed A1 beta-casein, and the other was fed A2. None of the A2 group developed diabetes, while half of the A1 group did. And A1 is also implicated in heart disease.
You say all this like it's a bad thing.
Diabetes, heart disease, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, The thing is, though,
it's easy to identify A1 and get it out of the milk supply, except for the fact that it's cheaper to just let the poison go, which seems to be, Reverbo, an ongoing theme here, that it's easier to poison people. I don't suppose you caught the New York Times article over the weekend about water, did you? Of course you did.
How would I do that when I could just spend the entire weekend with Kristen McGuire?
Kristen. I remember the evenings by the keyboard.
Very interesting. You know, interesting thing about milk and human beings. Humans are we're the only animal
that drinks some other animal's milk,
and drinks it way past the time that most other animals have put drinking milk.
Yeah, but you're not going to talk me out of ice cream.
No, I'm not trying to do that. But the cow, the pharmaceutical people who are pushing calcium on everybody are going to try to keep you drinking cow's milk from Cow Zero to forever. And, of course, you don't need to drink milk to get calcium either. I mean,
true.
There's basically one reason. There's no health.
There's lots of calcium to be had from chewing up oyster shells. I know it for a fact.
Other than how delicious ice cream is, there's no health need for it.
What about those people in the Ukraine who live to be like 500 years old because they eat Danone yogurt?
Would you really want to live to be 500 years old?
Have you seen the pictures of those people?
Look, I'm going to have a hard time with the opposite sex. I got a hard enough time with this whole Kristen McGuire business. I want to just end this now.
Reverbo, take care. Like I said, tell Joe to get my shirt back to me.
I can't. I'm going to think about these things at the wrong time. Oh, God, what a conversation. Yeah, calling your show is like calling other, my friend.
I'm sorry, you beeped there. It's like calling what?
No other.
Okay, good. I think.
Highest compliment I can be.
Well, it's always a joy, Reverbo. Have yourself a wonderful evening.
Make it personal, Bob.
Make it personal. Bye now.
Goodbye.
And by the way, for those of you wondering, that A1 possibly poisonous, the mutant protein thingy, isn't in milk fat solids like butter and so forth. A2 milk is marketed in the U.S., produced by Prairie Land Dairy in Nebraska. They started that in May of 2007. By December 2008, they had